At KPMG, our people make the difference. Combining the power of people and technology, we uncover brighter insights, innovate bolder solutions, and create better data-driven outcomes. KPMG, make the difference.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We bring in David Malpass, my dear friend, former president of the World Bank Group. Mr. Malpass served as an undersecretary in the Trump administration's Treasury Department. He also served under Ronald Reagan and Papa Bush. He's almost as old as I am. He's been in public life almost as long as I have, maybe longer. Happy July 4th, David Malpass, and to Adele Malpass.
Thank you, and to you and Judy, and to the country. July 4th is a giant event for people to remember what it took to found a successful country, and I think we should do that.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I've just given a brief lecture on that, as I do every July 4th on the radio. David Malpass, we turn to your favorite subject and mine, the economy, or the lack thereof. And my simple question to you at the beginning here, we have a nice leisurely half hour together. What is Bidenomics? Middle out, bottom up. What does that mean, David Malpass? And incidentally, is it working?
A couple observations on that. We have dangerously slow global growth. So one of the things that's happening is the world is changing, and I think in many ways it's giving soft power to China. It's causing instability or dictators to look at their opportunities and try to make a run for more power. So that's one consequence of the slow global growth that's going on. A point that strikes me is we're losing the checks and balances that were part of the founding of the country in terms of both spending and in terms of the activities of the Federal Reserve. It's not just in the U.S. It's in the advanced economies as a whole. The central banks never used to buy bonds. Now they not only buy bonds, but they choose which exact type of bonds to buy. It flattens the yield curve, and it benefits the rich at the expense of everybody else. So we have this brand new, impossible to analyze policy. And on the spending side, I think we have, as you know, right now, CBO just came out last week with their forecast, 7.3% average fiscal deficit for the next 30 years. So it's unimaginably large fiscal deficits into the future. No one's ever analyzed that or said that it's possible at all. I don't think it is. to have that big drain on the global economy. Where is all that money going to come from to do 7.3% every year? You know, in the past, if you got to 3% once, it was a giant red line. You did that, Larry, at the beginning of the Reagan administration. How do we get it down to where it is feasible? And so in many ways, we have going on right now the Great Society and the New Deal all at once, meaning the amount of spending that's coming out of this is as big a magnitude change in policy, fiscal and monetary policy, as we've ever experienced. And I mean, one consequence that I'm pretty sure of is the rest of the world won't have enough money.
Well, I think, you know, all this spending in just the last couple of years, that doesn't mean there wasn't a lot or too much spending before then. But particularly the last couple of years, almost $6 trillion of new spending. I mean, you know, David, I can be very cynical here, and it just looks to me like it's a big grift. It's a big grift. It's a Biden grift. He's spending for campaign donors, for large corporations, woke corporations, climate corporations, Democratic interest groups. It's not helping the economy. It's damaging the economy, and it's also propping up inflation, and we're going to pay for it by printing more money. As you say, central banks, our Federal Reserve, will keep buying bonds issued by the Bidens, all right? And I hope it comes to an end with the Republican in the White House next year, but we don't know that. I mean, they'll just keep printing more money, so we'll have more inflation. And my other point here is Mr. Biden talks about the middle out and the bottom up. It's the middle and lower income classes that have been hurt the most from inflation, haven't they? I mean, real wages are falling, average hourly earnings down 3%, average weekly earnings down 5%. I mean, they can't catch up. People may have jobs, but the jobs aren't buying what they're supposed to buy.
That's right. The front page of the Wall Street Journal has the one about people can't get their cars repaired. The supply chains are backing up around the world on the things that people want. So not only do they have to pay too much for compared to their budget, but they can't get what they want. And so that, but I want to emphasize this point that would be, that might be okay if it were a one-time thing. What CBO is saying is that they're baking it into 30 years of the United States policy, and Japan and Europe are doing that as well. So if you're one of the 3 billion people sitting in poorer countries, you look askance at this. You say, what is going on? We're never going to have a way out of this. And that's what concerns me from a fragility standpoint, a global weakness standpoint. It's dangerous for the U.S., for everybody.
Why can't we unleash prosperity? Why can't we have a rising tide lifting all boats?
We can, and you know, markets respond instantly if there's a positive policy direction. So it wouldn't take very much, but last week we saw the Fed say it may take years to get out of inflation. Mm. So that means you're locking in the ratchet, the upward movement in price, because if I've raised my price 15% already, which lots of businesses have, I'm not going to lower it if the Fed is saying inflation is here to stay. I'm just going to lock in that higher amount. Whereas if someone had a policy that said there's going to be more auto repair people the parts will go, you would have a disgorging. You know, people are hoarding. The first reaction that people have when they read that Wall Street Journal story about auto repairs not being available is they make an appointment for auto repairs. You know, they pull forward the demand.
Right. Yeah,
so
right.
the goal, I think, is to push back, to say, look, there's going to be plenty of stuff. The factories are going to really be growing, not the consumption, but the factories are going to be growing. And that means that all of a sudden, I think, we would be able to see inflation go back down.
But, David, is this auto repair for gasoline-powered cars? Because the Bidens don't want any gasoline-powered cars.
Part of it is the industry, I think, is shifting over to electric vehicles, so you can't buy the parts that you need. But it's all through the supply chain. It's getting the parts into the U.S. It's making enough parts, and it's having the workers to distribute them and then to install them on cars. And I think, really importantly, it's this pulling forward of demand. So all over the world, people are hoarding because they've been told that prices are going to go up in the future. So they say, well, I'll buy it now, which distorts. The other big distortion is this distortion of capital flows. If you've got central banks that are really playing a fiscal, you know, they've blended over onto the fiscal side where they choose which government bonds to buy. And so that really means that the monetary policy and fiscal policy are not independent of one another. They're going together. And that means if you're an investor, you want to buy things that the Fed is going to be buying, and they're buying bonds like crazy. So that explains the inversion of the yield curve, I think.
That inversion, by the way, if you go back to the New York Fed model, that inversion of the yield curve, short rates higher than long rates, the curve is upside down in effect, shows now a 71% chance of recession in the next year. What do you think?
Yeah, so I watched the value of the dollar. You see gold prices falling. The dollar is strengthening. So it's clear that the U.S. monetary policy is having some, drag on the economy. But I do think that we're in a, you know, this completely different policy world. The previous inversions of the yield curve that you're talking about weren't under a condition where the Fed was the major buyer of the bonds. So I think it's hard to predict. Well, I think that clearly the economy is slowing simply because of shortages of goods. And so you're starving the oxygen out of the economy.
What do you think Biden means? I'm being quite serious here. The middle out and the bottom up. I mean, you know, Newt Gingrich calls this big government socialism, where they're trying to use fiscal policy and monetary policy to direct the economy, David Mountpass. I mean, that is the antithesis of free market capitalism.
One of the ways governments do that is through subsidies. So it's the direct amount of money that you spend on ethanol or you spend on electric vehicles, the batteries. And so the government takes money from everybody around the world, and especially from the poor, and then puts it into chosen subsidized industries. So I think that's the simplest way to think about it. This is not just the U.S. At the World Bank, I really tried to get countries to stop taking money from the whole economy and giving it to their friends or their favored industries. And yet that's what politicians like to do, and it's hard to stop them. That's why I come back to this checks and balances. I think there has to be, constraints that on the spending and on the central banks, because otherwise the natural tendency of politicians is just bigger and bigger.
Isn't that basically what Biden's done here? He's just spending a fortune on his preferred industries. And I think to some extent, to a large extent actually, to his preferred interest groups. I mean, he's scratching every Democratic itch all along the way with this override of Green New Deal, climate change. I don't see how that helps middle class. I don't see how that helps lower income people. I don't see how that solves poverty. I mean, if anything, the inflation has made everybody significantly poorer in the last 2.5 years.
It is a way to have what the government wants to push it into the economy. I don't so much want to focus on the political side of it, but the economic side. I think people really have to think about that. We are in completely uncharted territory as far as the size of the government spending. So this, sorry to harp on it, Larry, but 7.3 over the next 30 years fiscal deficit is beyond anything ever imagined in economic theory. Nobody's ever thought about that being possible. So the U.S. is using its full historical creditworthiness to borrow all the money in the world every year for the purpose of pushing it out to where the government wants it to go. And that has consequences that we don't know. It's uncharted.
I mean, I'm certain that Milton Friedman is turning over in his grave, but I actually think John Maynard Keynes would turn over in his grave. This is not what Keynes wanted.
Yeah, and typically the U.S. at least had the idea that every once in a while there should be a balanced budget, right?
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's the thing about that. Keynes didn't want this either. I know Milton didn't want it, the late, great Milton Friedman. But I don't think Keynes wanted it. Keynes wanted it as a temporary stimulus. You and I aren't crazy about that idea either. But he didn't say permanent stimulus. He didn't say 7.3% per year for the remainder of all time. I mean, it's insanity. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You're going to come back and tell us how we get out of this mess. And I'm not going to let you off the hook, because I want to know how we can go about unleashing prosperity and generating a rising tide that lifts all boats.
Larry, I think there has to be a focus on production and output. As you know, where the focus right now is reducing consumption to the point where people can't raise prices. Well, the problem with that from the interest rate hike side and the government spending side is people just produce less and less under that scenario. So I think you can go back to an economy that's vibrant, that's robust. We saw an example recently. I-95 had this bridge collapse in Philadelphia. So the first estimates were, you know, it's going to take 6 months. And then somebody said, well, let's have a penalty incentive clause contract so that if it's done earlier, somebody makes more money. So immediately they saw a way to shorten the production cycle. So I think that can be done throughout the economy, and that would help everybody around the world. The burden right now is the U.S. is soaking up so much, and not just U.S., Europe and Japan, all of the world's energy resources, the world's capital resources for a declining population. And so there really has to be a rethink that starts from scratch, that we're not going to run fiscal deficits. You know, the government spending can't keep going up at this pace because there's just not enough money in the world, in the whole world, to pay for it.
And the regulatory burden has to come down. I mean, Biden has increased regulations enormously. I think it's a very anti-business administration. I think it's the most anti-business administration since FDR, Dave Malpass. And you're not going to produce if you're regulating, and you're not going to produce if you're taxing. And yes, you're not going to produce if you're spending. And by the way, those spending programs have unbelievable regulations attached to them, all of which is like a conspiracy to prevent production.
Yeah, and that has to do with, you know, each time the government passes a law, it's a little bit vague, and then the administrative branches come in and try to expand their TERP. So, you know, again, I think there has to be a full rethink also from the congressional side, that if you're passing a law, make it clear enough that that the people writing the regulations know what they're going to do. Now, that takes leadership, I think, strong leadership from the executive branch. That's true. Again, I'll say, you know, one of the competitions that the advanced economies have is China has this decision-making power. So when they decide to they made the mistake of having the COVID lockdown go on for 3 years, but then they figured out, oh, we're making a mistake, and almost overnight they stopped it. Late, it was in November of 2022. I was one of the first ones in after they stopped, and they had done a full rethink. They say, there's high youth unemployment, which is a real problem for China. So here's exactly what we're doing to change our system in a way that will make it better into the future. I'm no fan at all of communism. They have the Communist Party running it, but there is a decision process that's going on that's faster and more precise than what we're doing. That's dangerous in the defense sphere, but it is giving them opportunities in technology and other areas that are really concerning.
Well, you think China will overtake us?
They have a much bigger population, so I think their dollar GDP will go above ours. But we should think of it as, will it be a more successful economy than ours? And I would say absolutely not, except that CBO just put out this report that for 30 years we're going to make a mistake that China would never make. You know, they don't have this kind of fiscal deficit. And their economists would, in fact, our U.S. economists, as you point out, Keynes and Milton Friedman would look at the policies that we're running and say it will never work. It could never work. There's no textbook that says this could work.
So the question now is, we need to cut spending. We need to reduce regulation. We need to roll back all these new regulations. Casey Mulligan of the University of Chicago, whom you know, has been guesstimating. He's got new models up. The Bidens have, over the next 10 years, are going to have well over $1 trillion of additional regulations. And also the Bidens, you know, they snuck in some pretty big tax hikes, particularly on corporations and smaller businesses. I mean, we need to unleash some economic freedom, do we not?
We do. Two things that I'll, you know, in the CBO numbers from last week, they show that the tax take of the government is going to go up starting in 2026. And then a second thing that the projection showed, the Fed puts out projections that it's going to start buying bonds in large size starting in 2027. That's in the New York Fed's financial statements. And so what that means to the private sector economy is the government is buying bonds, so I better do things that produce bonds because the government is a big buyer of those. And that just slows growth. That's a, like a dead weight on the economy, because what you want the economy to feel is there's going to be short-term loans for businesses so they can build up their inventories properly and put in new equipment, short-term kind of financing. But instead, the Fed is buying bonds. So you're going to, we've already done it. We've shifted the whole economy toward commercial real estate and other things that are not needed.
All right. David Malpass, thank you ever so much. Happy July 4th weekend. Folks, we're going to take a break. The other side of the break, we're going to bring in our great legal analyst, Greg Jarrett, who's going to talk about these earth-shaking Supreme Court decisions, earth-shaking decisions that actually move us toward freedom. I'm Kudlow. We'll be back.